Hello and welcome to Mr. Sledge's After Party, the podcast that doesn't know why it even exists because Sledge's main cast has become so off-topic that this one serves little function. But it's supposed to serve as a medium where I talk about nerdy topics that don't really fit into the other show. This week I would like to talk about a pilot, a hero, and a dreamer. I will tell some stories of a man you know of, but possibly don't know much about. Let's see if you can guess who it is by the time I'm done with this podcast. I am always amazed at the members of the Greatest Generation, almost as much as I am annoyed with their kids or the me generation calling millennials entitled. But that's a topic for another day, and perhaps another podcast. People from all disparate backgrounds came together at the point of war, linking arms no matter the social status, and doing what needed to be done. War broke upon a generation, yet it did not define them. The man I'm going to talk about exemplifies this point. Growing up in Los Angeles in the 1920s sparked a keen curiosity in storytelling for a young boy. Even as a youth, he was a prolific writer and a consumer of pulp magazines like Tarzan, John Carter, and Skylark. Yet, as often is the case, matters both practical and patriotic had him majoring in police sciences at Los Angeles City College. He had also had a love of aeronautical engineering, and he sought a pilot's license through the United States Army Air Corps-sponsored civilian pilot training program. He was posted at Bellows Field, Oahu, and joined the 394th Bomb Squadron, 5th Bombardment Group of the 13th Air Force, which flew the massive, and aptly named, Boeing B-17 Flying Fortresses. On August 2, 1943, the plane he was flying overshot the runway by 500 feet and impacted trees, crushing the nose and starting a fire. Two men died as a result of the crash. The official report absolved the young pilot of any responsibility, blaming mechanical failure. But the loss of those two men would hang over our hero his whole life. He spent the remainder of his military career in the United States and flew all over the country as a plane crash investigator. He was involved in a further plane crash, this time as a passenger. He was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross and Air Medal for his service in the military. After the war and the end of his commission, he joined Pan Am Airways as a pilot. His experience flying large aircraft for long periods of time in the military granted him the largest planes and longest routes that Pan Am had at the time. Passenger flights from New York to Johannesburg and New York to Calcutta. It was flying back from Calcutta on June 18, 1947, when one of the engines on the Clipper Eclipse, a Lockheed L-49 Constellation aircraft, stopped working. This aircraft had four engines, and it was entirely possible to fly on three. Yet this aircraft was filled with 26 passengers and 10 crew members, making it awfully heavy. This second engine strained to keep the weight of all of its passengers aloft and began to overheat. And then it caught fire. Then panic ensued. Our young hero was deadheading, that is to say, he was a pilot with no duties at the time. The captain asked him to go back and calm the passengers. He went into the cabin and started telling everybody it was going to be okay. One woman, who was alone, sat crying. He sat next to her and told her it was going to be okay, even as the wing tore free. He told her it was going to be okay when the fuel lines caught fire. He told her this as the plane plummeted toward the Syrian desert. 15 people died on impact, 8 passengers, 7 crew members. Our young hero had several broken ribs, but he set about trying to free passengers from the quickly burning wreckage. He saved Nimbalkar Rajukumar, an Indian prince, and his mother, Maharani of Feltan, whom he had to pry out of her crumpled seat. He continued to help passengers and attempted to put out fires with a pillow as they spread throughout the passenger cabin. Soon the fire had spread so much that he could not make any further trips into the aircraft for survivors. He went to the cockpit, which had broken away from the rest of the plane, and pounded on the windows until they was driven back by the spreading fire, trying to rouse the other crewmen, who appeared slumped at the controls. The survivors watched the desert wind help engulf the flames of the aircraft and burn it to cinders, with the remains of those who could not be saved. The smell of burnt fuel and flesh clung to the survivors as they huddled throughout the night to stay warm. Gathering what equipment they could from the burning wreckage, including several first aid kits, a number of passengers' coats, and an inflatable life raft, he looked around. As the only surviving flight officer, he took command of the situation, but did so without knowing if the plane's position had been radioed to authorities. First aid was conducted, and after sunrise, the raft was inflated and propped up to provide shade and shelter. Shortly afterwards, a number of desert tribesmen approached the survivors. These Bedouins were not altruistic, however. Instead of coming to help, they came to pillage the remains. The young pilot approached them and managed to convince them to only rob the dead and not the survivors. Deciding that staying near the crash site might invoke more opportunities from less than hospitable locals, the pilot climbed a dune. Spotting telegraph poles and wires in the distance, he sent two teams of two men, each to follow the wires in both directions and report back what they saw. After they departed, local townsmen arrived at the crash site. They too stole from the wreckage, and also from the survivors, and after a short while, only left their clothing. After half a day, a team reported back that they had found the town of Mayadin, about 4 miles across the desert. The pilot found a telephone there and reported to the airstrip at Deir el-Azaz at around 8 a.m. the next day. Syrian army planes and ground troops were dispatched to recover the survivors. The first public reports of the crash came from the message sent to Pan Am's office in Damascus. By midday, the survivors had been transported by the Syrian army to the Presbyterian Mission Hospital in Deir ez-Zor. The most seriously injured of them were transported by plane to Beirut. Our pilot and the uninjured passengers were flown to Damascus. Several survivors of the eclipse arrived in the United States on June 23rd at LaGuardia Airport in New York City. But our pilot was delayed in Syria, as the government wanted him to aid their investigation into the crash. Following 2 weeks of questioning, he departed for the United States. When he returned home, he had been forever changed. He decided to go back to what was the love of his childhood, writing. He resigned from Pan Am, but still thought about flying. But this time, he would dream about flying the final frontier. Yes, the young pilot who saved all those lives in the Syrian desert was none other than Gene Roddenberry. He would create Star Trek and foster the imagination of countless millions while trying to exemplify Enlightenment ideals. He even found an individual who had seen war, tragedy, and heroism, then decided to use his skill as an actor instead. But that is a tale for another day. Thanks for listening, and check out our website at thecourtofnerds.com and the obligatory Emily post about Marvel and DC movies. I'm Kevin from The Court of Nerds saying, keep looking up.